Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our weekly gathering. It's good to see you all again. Why don't we start our gathering in our traditional way, which is by greeting one another. And as we do that, I will play a portion of Awakening by Deva Pramal and Mitten. Good morning again. what I would like to do today is share our statement of purpose. And it's kind of funny because I think I, like all of the ministers, when we go to share from our statement of purpose, we pick out either the purpose or the core values, that part that we really feel fits with the reading and the talk today. But when I went and read the purpose and the core values, although they're certainly related, they didn't feel like that bingo direct hit. But then when I read on our website the introduction that is above our purpose and core values, that's what felt more like the direct hit for today's reading and talk. So I'm going to read to you today from that introduction. There is consistent wisdom in the universe. It shows up in all religions, in philosophy, in all cultures, and throughout time. This wisdom is not unique or new. It is owned by no one and by no organization. No one has to go to a special place or special teacher to find it. It is the most abundant wisdom in the universe. Once one opens his or her heart to this wisdom, it appears everywhere by the hand of universal grace. There is also a way of not seeing universal wisdom. We all have the ability to be distracted from it by self-limiting and segmenting beliefs. Awakening Together is a universal assembly of peers dedicated to recognizing and embracing universal wisdom, regardless of the form in which it appears. We are also dedicated to recognizing the ways we deny universal wisdom by adopting personal beliefs and biases. We want to recognize these limitations so we can free ourselves from them and open to the continuous flow of universal wisdom. So before we begin with the spiritual part of our service, I'd like to share some announcements. First of all, Sunday nights, I'm sure you all have noticed, are just becoming magnificent here in the sanctuary over and over and over again. And tonight, we do have two special events. The first one officially begins at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, which is 4:30 Pacific. And I'm going to play an audio then, but this is an audio from just last Wednesday when I interviewed Ellie Ruzdar live here in the sanctuary. And since not everybody is able to be here in the middle of a weekday, we're going to play that recording tonight. Now, the reason I said it begins officially at 7:30 is because actually my recording is about an hour and 33 minutes long. So I'm really going to begin about 3 minutes before that. So if you want to hear everything, and I recommend that you hear everything, even the first few words that Ellie says, I think are very, very important. I don't recommend missing a single word of this interview. So really try to be here by at least 7:25 Eastern Time or 4:25 Pacific, and that way you won't miss a thing. Of course, after the recording is played tonight in the sanctuary, it will be posted so that you can listen to it on your own time if tonight isn't convenient or if you just want to hear it again. It's certainly worth hearing again and again. And then right after the Ellie Ruzdar recording, at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, which is 6 p.m. Pacific, Gina Lake will be here with us for the second week of her 8-week mini-series, Busting the Illusion. In this mini-series, we are learning how to free ourselves from the false self and its negative limiting beliefs, which I read about in our introduction. If you missed the first week and you want to listen to the audio from the first week before coming tonight, you can. You can go to awakening-together.org, go to Inspiration on the menu bar, and then under Inspiration, you'll find Featured Talks and Guest Miniseries. So if you go to that Guest Miniseries, then you'll be able to find last week Gina Lake. Even if you weren't able to be here last week, you can still come tonight, even if you don't have time to listen to the audio. So don't worry about that. Just please come. She's talking about exactly what we state in our introduction that we are interested in. You know, we say we want to recognize these limitations so we can free ourselves from them. And that's exactly what her 8-week miniseries is about. So it's a bingo for us. Also, remember, when it comes to these Common Ground miniseries, we do offer the opportunity to donate directly to the spiritual teacher that is taking the time to come and share with us. Gina will be here 8 weeks. And so at any time during the 8-week time period, you can make your donation. You can just go to our website underneath Donate, and you'll find the donate option that is strictly for the miniseries. And when you donate to that, 100% of those funds will go to Gina, minus the PayPal fee, of course. So please, please be generous and share. As you all know, the Awakening Together Fall Retreat is coming up in October with Regina Don Akers, Brent Haskell, and John Mark Stroud. And people are actively registering for these retreats now. I just wanted to remind you that there is a discount for those who pay in full by August 15th and that we have an option this year to make payments until you're paid in full. So if you register now and begin making those payments, you could be paid in full in time to get that discount. So I just wanted to remind you of that. However, this week I want to focus more on another retreat that's coming up. This retreat will happen in February 2017. And it's being dubbed an informal pilgrimage or an informal retreat because you are going to book your own flights and make your own hotel reservations. However, we are going to India in February of 2017. We will leave the United States on February 6th, and we will return to the United States on February 22nd. We will spend the first few days relaxing near the beach in Chennai, India, and we will visit a few places of spiritual significance there in Chennai. And then on February 11th, we will travel to Tiruvannamalai, and we will spend the rest of the time at Arunachala and Ramana Ashram. We will be there during what is known as the Satsang season. I've never gone during the Satsang season. I've been there twice, but I've always gone off season. So it will be interesting to see the Satsang season. But lots of spiritual teachers come from all over the world and hold Satsangs in Tiruvannamalai during January, February, and March. So there will be lots of opportunities for people to go to Satsang if that's what you want to do. Also opportunities for just going to Ramana Ashram and meditating. Even opportunities for a little bit of, sightseeing, if you will. So if you're interested in going to India next February, you can learn all about it. You can also learn all about the fall retreat in the same place. So both the fall retreat and the India pilgrimage are at awakening-together.org under the events menu. And if you are interested in going to India, please read that page very carefully. Please read that page about the retreat very carefully. My final announcement today is that next Sunday will be our Movie Watchers discussion group. And so if you haven't watched this month's movie yet, you still have 1 week left to watch. And the name of the movie is Lars and the Real Girl. Yeah, Barb got that typed in practically before I got it out of my mouth. Lars and the Real Girl. And as you all know, I say a little prayer before I begin the movie. I ask to see what it is that I am to see in the movie, and then I will bring that to the discussion group next week. Hopefully you all will also be bringing what you have seen in the movie. Jacqueline Eckert is going to be our hostess. She will be our facilitator for the movie group, and that will be next Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific. And then, of course, it will be followed by Gina Lake again in her third week of her miniseries. All right, so that concludes our announcements for today. So the next song I'm going to play, our opening song, is called New Soul by Yael Naim. And I just want to tell you a little bit about why I selected this song before I play it. Today's teaching and reading are going to be about mistakes we make on the spiritual path. And sometimes when people learn about mistakes they've made, and especially if they see, oh yeah, I've made that mistake, or I am currently making that mistake, they look at it with the wrong mind and they start to feel guilty. And that's not the purpose of looking at mistakes. The real purpose of looking at mistakes is so that we can be free. Because if we're making mistakes and not seeing them, we're kind of in a little web. We're like captured in a web or captured in a net. But there are holes in that web or holes in that net. And the hole is seeing the mistake, right? And then seeing through it and becoming free of it. So I love this song, New Soul. She's singing about how she's a new soul in the world and all she does is make mistakes. She makes every mistake possible. But yet there's this light. It's not a heavy song. It's a light, joyful song. And so I love looking at mistakes with joy. And that's why I'm beginning today with Yael Naim. So here we go. One of my many favorite songs, New Soul.
Into this strange world, hoping I could learn a bit. finding myself making every possible mistake.
Let's go into our prayer. As usual, I will start with silence, and when the prayer begins to pray itself, I will speak it. A natural part of clarity is seeing what isn't clear and recognizing it as unclear. And this is nothing to be afraid of. There is a thought that lives in the mind that can cause us to be afraid of seeing our mistakes. And that thought is what I call the I am bad thought. The thought somehow twists us into believing that if we make mistakes, we're guilty, or we're less than, or we're unworthy. And this could be called an ego trick. Because clarity sees the unclear and recognizes it as not clear. So if we are afraid to see and to admit our mistakes to ourselves, then we stay in the unclear. We stay in the muddled. Today we read our introduction, which says that we want to see our self-limiting beliefs, wanting to see our mistakes, wanting to see that they are mistakes, wanting to see through them. That comes from clarity. That comes from the awakening mind, the one that is awakening us. And so we are grateful for this opportunity today to look at our mistakes. Help us to look at them with clarity. Amen. All right, I'm going to turn the microphone over to Reverend Sandy Ruiz. She will read our reading today. It is called Misplacing the Teachings, and it's written by Michael Langford. Sandy, the mic is yours. Hi, Sandy. I hope you're not having a challenge taking the mic. I just wanted to let you know, in case you thought you had it, that you don't. And I'm turning it over to you again. All right, Sandy, as far as I can tell, you're not able to take the mic. So what I will do is, I guess, read the reading today. Unless you think you can take it, then put your hand up quickly. Because once my eyes go to the reading, I probably wouldn't see if you put your hand up. And I assume everyone is hearing me okay. Is that correct? Yes, okay. All right, then tell you what. Let me read the reading on Sandy's behalf. Last week I was the minister on Jay's behalf. Today I will be the reader on Sandy's behalf. So here is today's reading. Misplacing the Teachings by Michael Langford. One of the pitfalls to be avoided could be called misplacing the teachings. The meaning of this is to not understand the purpose of a teaching, and then to try to use a teaching for a purpose it was not intended. It is being called misplacing the teachings because it is taking a teaching that belongs in one place and applying it to a place where it should not be applied. Here is an example. One might read a teaching that says, "There are no differences in the true self." That teaching is true. There is also no world and no universe in the true self, as the Step 2 quotes point out in the Seven Steps to Awakening. Here is an example of how that teaching can be misplaced. People think that because the true self has no differences, they should not perceive any differences. Not perceiving differences in the illusion humans call life, or call the world, or call living a human life, is not the purpose of that teaching. The purpose of that teaching is just to tell you what the nature of the true self is. The ability to perceive differences and to discern one thing from another is one of the most valuable tools you can have. It is one of the most valuable tools you can have, both for your spiritual progress and for how to live in the worldly life. Many people, when they are taught that the world is an illusion and that in the true self there are no differences, make the above described mistake of misplacing the teaching. Although many people make that mistake on many different paths, one of the most common places where people make that mistake is in what is called Neo-Advaita, or the new non-duality. Although the example that follows has a humorous aspect, there is an important teaching here. For those who say there are no differences, and who say we should not perceive any differences, we should make a law that every morning for breakfast they have to eat a bowl of sand instead of a bowl of cornflakes. If there are no differences, or if we are not supposed to perceive differences, then what difference would that make? If you are one of those people still attached to the mistaken notion that we should not perceive any differences in the world, please do not actually eat a bowl of sand for breakfast. It could be hazardous to your physical health. This example has only been about one particular teaching that gets misplaced. Of course, there are many other teachings that are misplaced. The teaching that you are not the body is a very important teaching. It is misplacing the teaching to then conclude that one need not take good care of the body, or that one need not seek treatment. It is very important, both for spiritual progress and for a skillful worldly life, to keep the body healthy. There are a small number of quotes in the Seven Steps to Awakening about the importance of keeping the body healthy until the true self is realized. Quote 561 by Annamalai Swami is an example of that. Here is that quote. Realizing the true self is the only useful and worthy activity in this life. So keep the body in good repair until that goal is achieved. Afterwards, the true self will take care of everything and you won't have to worry about anything anymore. In fact, you won't be able to, because the mind that previously did the worrying, the choosing and the discriminating, will no longer be there. In that state, you won't need it and you won't miss it. Here are some more examples of misplacing the teachings. The true self has no effort, no choices, no action, no decisions. That is a true teaching. The purpose of that teaching is to describe the nature of the true self. How that teaching gets misplaced is people thinking that in the illusion humans call human life, the world, etc., that they should not make effort, not make choices, not have action, not make decisions. For both one's spiritual progress and skill in the worldly life, all four of the following are essential. Number one, wise effort. Number two, making wise choices. Number three, engaging in wise actions. And number four, making wise decisions. And that's the end of the reading. Thank you, Sandy, for being willing. All right. What book was that from? It's not from a book. It's actually from an email. So I will post that along with the recording of this gathering, so that a way you can read it for yourself. But yeah, it's not something that everyone has access to. It's not in a book. All right, so let's talk about what Michael has said here. One thing that really catches my eye when I read what he has written is with every one of these misplaced teachings, when he corrects that point of view, he says, and this is true in each of these cases, it's quite interesting, he says that it is important both for our spiritual progress and for our life in this world, right? For a skillful worldly life, he calls it, that we don't misplace that teaching. I'm going to focus on just part of that sentence, although I think a skillful worldly life is important, and maybe I'll get back to that. But first I'll talk about, he says, that it is important for our spiritual progress that we not misplace the teaching. What that says to me is, misplacing the teaching then is an ego trick to keep us from making spiritual progress. And that's why it's important to see these mistakes. The way it seems to me is that when we make these mistakes of misplacing the teaching, it's because the teaching lives at the intellectual level and has not absorbed or gone into the being in any way, so that it's not understood at a cellular level. Of course, these are just symbols, but maybe you know what I mean. It's not understood at a cellular level. It's at the head level only. And of course, the head level or the thought level, that's the realm of the ego, which means the ego can twist these teachings in any way it wants to. So although I may go into talking about other misplaced teachings, I know a couple of other ideas have ran past my mind, although right this moment I don't recall them. But as I was reading, there were other thoughts. Oh yeah, here's another misplaced teaching. Oh yeah, here's another misplaced teaching, right? Although I could go into that and I may, I think first we should maybe look at what I perceive as most important. Because, you know, as Michael Langford would say, if we sit here and list even 10 ways that we misplace the teachings, well, there can be 1,000 or even 1,000,000 other ways that we misplace the teachings. So we can't spend 15 minutes, you know, specifically looking at all of the ways that we misplace the teachings. But what I think we can do is we can look at the cause of misplacing teachings. I think there's one cause. And if we can find the cause of misplacing the teachings and correct that, then it seems that the rest of it would take care of itself, right? And I'm going to begin, yeah, the root cause, absolutely. I'm going to begin with the bottom of what Michael Langford wrote, where he says, for both one's spiritual progress and skill in the worldly life, all four of the following are essential. Let me read that list to you again, and then listen for the common denominator in all four of these. Pretend like you're back in math class and you're looking for the common denominator. What is the common denominator in these four things that are essential? Number one, wise effort. Number two, making wise choices. Number three, engaging in wise actions. And number four, making wise decisions. Yeah, Ron and Peggy have listed it. Wise, wise, wise. Yeah, wisdom. Wise. Yeah. And dances is getting to where I'm headed. Dances is a step ahead of me, and I'm okay with that. When you're dancing, somebody has to lead, right, dances? So she's a step ahead of me, and that's fine. Yeah. How do we get to wisdom? I mean, that's what wise is referring to, wisdom. There's a difference between wisdom and intellectual knowing. I'm going to share something with you from A Course in Miracles. This is actually in the introduction to A Course in Miracles. Assuming I can find it. It'd be nice sometimes, I guess, if I knew what I was going to say before I said it, because then I would be all prepared. But here we go. In my original course, this is on page VIII, so page 8 of the introduction. It's the very last sentence right before the subheading, What It Is. This is what the introduction to A Course in Miracles says. It's referring to the course. Its only purpose is to provide a way in which some people will be able to find their own internal teacher. Imagine that, right? In the introduction to the course, it tells us the only purpose of this book is to help some people, it doesn't say all people, to help some people find their own internal teacher. The sentence right before that says, it, meaning the Course, is not intended to become the basis for another cult. And, you know, one definition of a cult, of course, is where everybody gives up all their money and and follow the leader. I actually don't think that's the definition of the word cult here. I think the definition of the word cult here is where it becomes like another religion that somehow, over time, gets further and further away from its purpose. That's what seems to happen with all religion. It gets further and further away from its purpose. I think that's the way the word cult is being used here. Dogma develops, yes. So right there in the introduction to the Course seems to, in its own words, be warning us that we can misplace these teachings, the whole thing. The Course can and may, over time, maybe already is for the majority of people, it can become completely useless. Even though it wasn't brought to us to be completely useless. But it can be completely useless in the hands of the wrong mind. Our job is to access the right mind, the Holy Spirit, the inner teacher, spiritual wisdom, whatever you want to call it. That's our job. And Dance has already told us how, although it has scrolled off the board already, but Dance has answered that question already. We do that through contemplation. Yeah, contemplation. I don't know how to describe the difference between contemplation and thinking with the intellectual mind, although I'm very clear on the difference. Peggy says, a quiet mind, silence. I can describe for you what contemplation is like for me. When I contemplate, I read very, very, very slowly. I may, in some cases, read one sentence for an entire week. Sounds crazy, doesn't it? But I may read one sentence for an entire week. And as I read that one sentence for an entire week, more and more depth and clarity comes, and not at the intellectual level, at that cellular level I was referring to again. And that clarity that comes as I read oh so slowly and just sit with what I've read, often with pen in hand, because in my case, pen in hand and writing is a part of that. For some people, sitting with a recorder and speaking is a part of that, and for some people, neither of those things. But as I sit with pen in hand reading one sentence for an entire week, additional depth, additional depth, additional depth comes, and that is not coming from the intellect. That is the wisdom. In fact, when Michael Langford says we need wise effort, wise effort could be the effort to, instead of running off to the gym or sleeping later and getting up just in time to go to work or whatever our habit is, coming directly into the sanctuary even. Instead of running out into the world, wise effort could be the effort that it takes to change that habit and going to a quiet place for a bit first, for a bit of contemplation. The reason that takes effort is because we have a habit of doing something else. I remember Marianne Williamson talking about her habit was to get up every morning and watch the news first. And immediately, because anybody who knows Marianne Williamson, you know that she's politically inclined. And so immediately when she would start the day by watching the news first, she also started the day angry. That was her habit. And at some point along the way, she noticed that she needed to put in the effort to not go directly to the news, and instead to go directly to the Course, or whatever else she might use that I don't know about, and to go into contemplation first. So you see, that's wise effort. Yeah, Karen is saying, contemplation is allowing the question to come up from the innocent heart. Yeah, one thing that's really important for contemplation when you read something, even if you've read it 1,000 times before, is to read it as if today it's got something different for me than it's given me before. And I don't know what that is. In fact, today, I don't know if any of you all are in Sharing in Contemplation, which is a Facebook group. And if you saw the post that I made today, but today I contemplated a quote that I contemplated for quite a while yesterday. And today when I contemplated that quote, the question I asked was, and I don't remember the exact words, but the general idea was, what else can this quote give me? You see, I didn't open the quote, oh yeah, I contemplated this yesterday, I know what it means. I started today with, what else can this quote give me? What else is here? Right? As we spend time in contemplation of whatever spiritual material we're guided to, it could take us a long, long, long time to get through a book. I've been with the 7 Steps to Awakening since January of 2012, and I'm about halfway done. It's not about how long you're with the material that inspires. It's about what's happening with the material that inspires. Genuine happening. Also, another thing I want to tell you about misplaced teachings. Although I wasn't aware of that term until, you know, in the last year or so when Michael Langford sent that email. I was aware of that habit. I just didn't have those words. But I could feel it in my chest when I or someone else was misplacing the teaching. The teaching. Hear how I went into my southern accent there? My eyes landed on Peggy and my mouth went southern, just like that. That shows how conditioning works. The teaching. Anyway, as I was saying, I could feel it in my chest. It was a feeling of not right, not guilty, not, it wasn't a guilty feeling, it was not right, as if, you know, there's something inside of us that is there as our friend to guide us in the right direction, right? To guide us in the direction of the path that we want to follow, right? The path that we have chosen. And when we start to make a wrong turn, it says not right. That's not right. And I could feel the not right. That not right is also wisdom. And, you know, Michael Langford says we have to make wise choices A wise choice is recognizing the not right immediately, and although we may not understand what is right, sometimes when you're heading off in a not right, you don't understand what is right, so you don't have the other side of the coin yet, but at least knowing, oh, I'm wrong here. I'm wrong. This is a misunderstanding. I am misunderstanding the teaching. I can tell by how I feel. In fact, Thich Nhat Hanh, in the beginning of his book, The Heart of Buddha's Teachings, he talks about this. He talks about how, you know, Buddha's teachings were passed on verbally for hundreds of years before they were ever written down. And then he even says, and I don't know if this is true or not, but let's go with it. He even says that the monk who finally did write down the teachings for the first time was actually highly egotistical. So, you know, I think what he's trying to tell us is we don't know for sure if these are Buddha's teachings. I think that's what he's trying to say. He might even say that in the book, and I might have just forgotten. We don't know for sure that these are Buddha's teachings. We don't know for sure that they're right. And there was too much opportunity for distortion there, passed down by word of mouth and then written down by a highly egotistical monk. But then he goes into wisdom. He says that when you're reading the teaching, you feel within. That if you have the right understanding of the teaching, there will be a sense of expansion. We could call it a sense of freedom. A sense of, ah. Or even a sense of, aha, I see. If we are misreading the tension, that's when we get the contraction, right? The like you got punched in the gut. That punched in the gut feeling is also guidance. It's saying you right now are misunderstanding. That's what it's saying. You right now are misunderstanding. If you saw the same teaching in another light, you would feel differently. Now, a mistake that we make when we read a teaching, it could be Michael Langford's teaching, for example, and we feel that contraction. A mistake that we make is saying Michael Langford is wrong. And I'm only using him as an example. It could be A Course in Miracles. It could be anything. But we say Michael Langford is wrong instead of, ah, I'm misunderstanding. This is my contraction. I'm misunderstanding. And then just realize you misunderstand, and so drop your understanding. Be willing to be open. Be willing to be in that space, in that not knowingness. Because what the mind will then do, if you aren't willing to be in that not knowingness, is the mind will automatically start looking for an understanding that it likes. But that, again, is not happening with wisdom. That's the wrong mind trying to look for an understanding that it likes. It's trying to adjust. That contraction that we feel when we first misunderstand a teaching is important to us, to our own spiritual progress. It's important that we say, ah, I must be misunderstanding this. Ah, and go back into the I don't know. And we don't have to know. At some point, all clarity will arise. But we don't have to know right now. And that's important because, again, if we think we have to know right now, we'll use the mind to try and figure it out. Michael Langford says we have to make wise decisions. A wise decision is being willing to not know. Being okay with not knowing, but walking away from whatever understanding you had that caused the contraction. I was asked specifically to talk about one misplaced teaching, so I'll do that. It's the teaching that the world is an illusion, which is a true teaching. Just like Michael said about all of these other teachings, it's a true teaching. But just like Michael said about all of these other teachings that he listed, it is important to both your spiritual progress and skill in worldly life that you do not misplace it. And as I said, what's most important to me right now is that spiritual progress part of that sentence. So how can misplacing the teaching that the world is an illusion retard our spiritual progress? Two ways come to mind right now, and there's probably other ways, but two ways come to mind. The first is that it keeps us from looking at what we want to look at, what we need to look at in order to heal. And the second, which sounds very similar, but it's actually somewhat different, is that it keeps us from looking at the ego honestly. So they sound very similar, but let me talk about the two. The first one, it keeps us from looking. You know, the common example, I know you all have heard this example, right? At least I think you all have. The common example is the story of the course student. You know, someone loses a child or a spouse or a sibling or something like that. And the course student, who is not the someone who experienced a close death, right? The course student says, oh, it's just an illusion. That discounting of that experience as just an illusion is the core student's way of avoiding the fact that inside he or she is afraid of death. Dolores is giving the example of starving children. Oh, that's just an illusion. That is a way of the core student avoiding the fact that he or she is afraid of lack or suffering. I remember Earl Purdy several years ago. I reminded him of this year. Several years ago, I think it might have been the first time I ever heard Earl Purdy speak. He was speaking on this misplaced teaching right here. The world is an illusion. And he said something about how quick course students are, and apparently Neo-Advaita students too, how quick course students are when somebody's house burns down to say, oh, it's just an illusion. Like, you should be okay with that. You know, you shouldn't be upset. It's just an illusion. And then Earl said, can you say that if your house is burning down? He says, if you can't say it when your house is burning down, you shouldn't say it at all. And if you don't know for a fact that you can say it when your house is burning down, you shouldn't say it at all. Which means in most cases we shouldn't say it at all, because guess what? I'm not actively in a war zone right now. How do I know how I would feel in a war zone? I'm not actively starving right now. I don't actively have cancer right now. My house is not actively burning down right now. How can I say for a fact that I would respond in absolute peace knowing that it was an illusion? Therefore, I shouldn't say it. It's a form of denial. And the reason I reminded Earl of that this year was because this year his house did burn down, well, his apartment. It did, just before he came to the conference in April. And when I reminded him that, he rolled his eyes. He went, oh, and he rolled his eyes. He didn't tell me at all about what emotions he may have been experiencing or anything while his house was burning. He just rolled his eyes. But what's the advantage of us knowing that it's an illusion? Because there's an advantage, too. The teaching wouldn't be there if it didn't have an advantage. Well, I've shared this with you many times. The advantage is learning this. The advantage is learning where the illusion comes from, where the world comes from, so that we can start accepting the correction in our own mind. What I think I see or perceive. What I perceive, I experience. What I experience, I think. So the advantage of knowing that the world is an illusion is that we can look. You see, misplaced, we're avoiding looking. Rightly placed, we can look and start looking for the thinking in our mind, the believing in our mind that is causing this type of perception, either directly in my life or just out there in the world. And that takes me to the second thing that I said about this, that if we misplace the teaching, the world is an illusion, then we're not looking at the ego. My first example was a little more personal. I'm not looking at what I personally am afraid of. I may personally be afraid of death, or I may personally be afraid of lack, or I may personally be afraid of suffering, and I'm avoiding it by saying, oh, it's just an illusion. The second one is more general. You know, like the other day, there was a story in the news about a 14-year-old girl in India who was raped by her father, afraid to tell anyone, which I think is kind of natural sometimes, right? Afraid to tell anyone. And then when it was found out, she was beaten. And by beaten, I mean like Jesus was beaten, lashes, except she only got 14 lashes, not 40. She was beaten for not telling by the village elders. When I look at that, that has nothing to do with my personal life. But that has everything to do with the general ego. The general ego that we all think with for as long as we think we're a person. When I look at that, I take responsibility for the general ego. You know, you all can't see in my mind. I know you can't see in my mind, and I get that. But if you could, you might be pleasantly surprised. You might see that actually a lot of purification, honest and genuine purification, has happened here. And that this mind isn't judging you the way you think I am. You know, some of you think I am. This mind isn't worried or fearful. This mind isn't attached. This mind is spontaneous. But the idea of person is still there. And what I see is that the idea of person itself, without all of the crap, just by itself, is the cause of all suffering in the world. And so I don't quickly say the world is an illusion and blow it off, you know, like some girl wasn't raped and beaten in India and even worse things that I don't even hear about. I don't blow it off. I embrace it. With the responsibility of letting go of my own belief that I'm a person. Yes, I understand it's an illusion. Yes, I understand it comes from my thinking I'm a person. Therefore, I embrace that pain. I take responsibility for that pain. And I get up every day and sit on my purple sofa for as long as the day will allow in meditation and contemplation. And then even when I get up, I stay very focused in genuine right now walking practice that I, you know, like watching my own mind, being aware of awareness, accepting all things, right? I respond to it, not in a denial way, but it's mine. It's mine. It's my responsibility. Out of love, to let go of me. I hope that we never say, oh, it's an illusion in a blowing off way again. In fact, awakening together has a fifth core value that was designed strictly for that purpose. Let me pull it up and read it to you. This, and remember, these core values came on a napkin so quickly. I don't feel like I wrote them. Wisdom wrote them. And wisdom gave us, those of us who are listening to this right now, gave us, this group of people, this fifth core value so that we would not misplace that teaching. The world is an illusion. The fifth core value says we accept all forms as temporary appearances, permitted through enduring awareness of self. What that means is, you know, some people say things like, why doesn't God stop this? That's like asking, why doesn't the space in the room stop the two people from fighting in the room? Well, the space in the room is just being the space. And love is just being love. It doesn't interfere and stop anything. It's just being itself. It's only aware of itself. So we accept all forms as temporary appearances, and they are permitted through enduring awareness of self. All right? But we live this value by, this is what's important to us, we live this value by honoring all appearances and all experiences while continually reflecting on changeless truth. In other words, we don't say to anyone, when they're telling us the story about the 14-year-old girl who was raped and then beaten by the village elders, oh, that's just an illusion. Because in doing that, we are not honoring that experience. We're not honoring that appearance. We're not honoring how that felt to that 14-year-old body. And trust me, it was a very real experience to that 14-year-old body. Nor do any of us know that if we went out today and somebody, whether we're male or female, somebody raped us, beat us and raped us, and then we maybe even tried to report it and people laughed at us or told us it was our own fault, we don't know how we'd feel. This is just denial. You don't know how you'd feel. You don't know how you'd respond. So let's have respect for people's experiences. But respect is not the same thing as going all the way down into the hole with them. That's where the second part of the we live this value sentence comes from. We live this value by honoring all appearances and all experiences. Boom, here we go. This is what we are to do also, while continually reflecting on changeless truth within ourselves. We honor their experience of sadness, their experience of suffering, their experience of lack. And sometimes we honor these experiences by giving them a shoulder to cry on, right? By giving them money, right? We honor their experience while we continually reflect on changeless truth in whatever way we are able to at this point on our spiritual journey. So watch within yourself with a subtle mind. A subtle mind is a mind that's really feeling for right and wrong. Not guilty and not guilty, but right or wrong. Like you're feeling for directions and you're being asked, what way am I to walk? And you're feeling for that's the right way and that's the wrong way, right? Have a very subtle mind all of the time. Always giving attention, feeling for right and wrong. And when you see wrong, drop it. And enter into the space of I don't know. And when you see right, go that way. Follow that. That's making wise choices. That would be wise effort, wise action, wise decisions. All right. And with that said, it sounds like we ended on the note of learn to follow guidance and follow it. So with that said, I'm going to go into our song for contemplation. It is a Kirtana song about guidance. It's called Do You Hear the Music? And while I'm playing this song, if you feel to donate to Awakening Together, Barb will give you that link. Here we go.
listen to the music in your heart. In your heart.
Ron just asked a question on the board, which I want to read for the recording. He said, I seem to have this avoidance to saying to someone that has experienced a painful situation, I am so sorry you are having to deal with this. This comes from the belief that we each have chosen what we will experience or learn. I'm thinking I can still be compassionate without going there. Am I misplacing the teaching? And I answered, if there is avoidance, it needs to be looked at. You see, avoidance is the contraction that I talked about, the constriction in the chest. Avoidance is the inner guidance saying, not right. Your understanding of this right now is not right, right? That's what it's saying. And also, just to let you know, in that belief that, quote, we each have chosen what we will experience, there's a thought of separation that's not true. That we would have to be separate for us to have individually chosen our experiences. So there's a thought of separation there that's not true. This is what Buddha taught when he taught interdependent co-arising, about how everything together makes everything, right? So, yeah. All right, Jay, the mic is yours.
Yeah, the question I have, and more of a thought, is that since, the interdependent co-arising, since we're experiencing all of this as a collective, on both sides of what we call good and bad experiences, it's like the extension of that compassion for the person that's just suffered a painful experience is almost like you're not thinking, like you said just then, about this person caused this, therefore that whole track, or are you thinking, I'm going to avoid this because they created their suffering and I'm not going to be, I don't think that way. That's cold. It's like the compassion has to come from this middle ground of like universal compassion for suffering. And I don't quite know how to describe it, but I hear the picture of what you're talking about, Regina. I just lack the words to describe it, but I guess maybe it'd be universal compassion, but it is specifically applied to the individual. But it's more like a switch in your own mind, is a switch that this is personal. It's like you seem to be, to the outside world, to be acting in a very personable way, being compassionate and connected to an individual after their experience of suffering. But in your own mind, somehow not flipping that switch of thinking this is personal or they caused or any of that kind of thing. Like, I don't know how to describe it, but I just wanted to maybe ask a question or have any of your thoughts.
Yeah, the compassion can come from the same place. It's a genuine compassion, not an imagination, not a mental compassion. It can come from the same place as the compassion that you might have for a 3-year-old child who's scared to go to sleep because he thinks there's monsters in his closet. Right? If you've ever been around a small child who had that belief, you know there's no monsters in the closet, but you aren't blowing off the child's fear because you love the child. So there's a genuine compassion for the child's suffering. And whatever you can say or do to help alleviate that suffering, you do. You want the child to be at peace. And you might even pretend a little bit. I think it's Peggy. I think Peggy is the one that has brought to me the idea of monster spray, where you spray the monster spray in the closet and under the bed and say, okay, now monsters can't come. It's just a bottle of water that mists. But, here's monster spray, right? Like, you don't believe any of that. But the compassion is a genuine compassion. Genuine compassion does not require belief. Belief, it would be a mistake. Also, let me make this as simple as I can because the mind likes to, you know, mess things up. So I'm going to say this as simple as I can. I take responsibility for every wrong-minded appearance that I know about, and even those I don't, to be honest, by coming into this room that I'm sitting in right now every morning, sitting on that purple sofa, going into meditation and contemplation deeply for as long as the day will allow, and then when I emerge from that, staying in my walking practices. In other words, by being as right-minded as I can in every moment, by seeing my own ego tricks and seeing through them, by continuing in every way that I can to walk this spiritual path genuinely until there is no ego sense, no sense of person here anymore. And the reason I say that's simple is because sometimes people go off into this analyzing witch hunt of, oh no, what am I thinking that would cause a girl over in India to be raped by her father and then beaten by the village elders? You're just probably going to get all confused if you do that. Just keep it simple. Just keep letting go of the belief that you're a person. In the song that we just heard by Kirtana, she said, question your mind's main assumption. Those were her words. Question your mind's main assumption. That main assumption is I am a person. If you keep it there, you keep it simple. Now, does anyone else have anything they want to share before I close this weekly gathering down and go eat waffles? All right, then. I want to thank you all for coming. I want to thank you all again for taking the topic very seriously, that genuineness in listening and applying it to yourself is important, and that's also where we are connected. We are connected in our genuineness, in our listening, and in our applying it to ourself, accepting the atonement for ourself. That's where we're connected. And I will play a closing song. The closing song is, the artist's name is Mark Lawrence, but that is just a star pseudonym. Some of you know this individual. His name is Laurent Elie Levy. And the song is All of Me. And when Laurent used to sing this song in the shower, he was really singing a song of surrender, saying, take all of me, or help me to surrender and surrender and surrender until there's no me left. So even though that's not the exact words in the song, this classic song, understand the spirit of the singer. Here we go.
All of me. Why not take all of me? Can't you see? I'm no good without you. Take my lips. I wanna lose them. Take my arms. I'll never use them. Your goodbye left me with eyes. How can I get along without you? to see. I'm no good without you. Take my lips, I wanna lose them. Take my arms, I'll never use them. Your goodbye left me with eyes that cry. How can I ever make it without you? You took the part that once was my heart. So why not? Why not take all of me?
Go, take all of me. That's really what we're about here in Awakening Together. I will see you tonight in the sanctuary. Remember, be here by 7:25 so you don't miss a word of Elie Ruzdahr, and then hang out and stay for Gina Lake. See you then. Bye.